Everyone, welcome to this Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services. It is April 9th, and I'm going to rearrange the agenda. We're going to start with Senate Bill 806. I'd like to open a public hearing on 806. And Sandy?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 806 is at the request of the good chair. The bill is authorizing individual licensed to practice medicine or podiatry in another state or country to provide health care services for out-of-state athletic team under certain circumstances. Madam Chair, members of the committee, should the committee choose, we do have a fiscal statement, which is a minimal expenditure impact statement and a no revenue impact. And there are no amendments that I'm aware of.
Nor will there be, so. So that's the good chair. Who would be the bad chair is what I want to know. But
I'm going to refrain from commenting on that one.
Thank you, Vice Chair and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Monis Anderson. I represent Gresham, Trout, Delwood Village, and Fairview. And I'm here bringing Senate Bill 806 to you. It was the American Medical Society for Sports Medicine actually came up with this concept. They are working on this and have passed this bill in several other states, many other states. Basically, 17 states recognize a medical practice exemption for physicians who travel into a state with an athletic team solely to provide care for that team. And for team physicians who travel into multiple states, obtaining and maintaining licensure in each state under a scenario where they are not even providing medical care to residents of the state, that constitutes an excessively high administrative cost and risk management burden. So basically, this bill would amend the language of the State Medical Practices Act to include an exemption from licensing requirements for team physicians. And I have two physicians on my right and on my left who will tell you why we should pass this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, and members of the committee, and I will let the two physicians take over.
My name is Dr. Doug Aukerman, and I'm a physician in Corvallis, Oregon, and team physician in Oregon State. Chair and committee members, thank you for taking time to listen to us. So it is important for physicians who are team physicians to be able to travel with the athletes that they provide care for. And when they cross state lines, they are essentially practicing without a medical license in that state, which is difficult to do if you end up having to get a state license or a temporary license in every state that you would then be traveling to with your team. I traveled with Penn State for several years and actually did go through the process of getting state licenses in different states, and it cost me about $10,000 a year to be in each individual state no more than 4 days. And it is an excessive burden. The 20 states, including California and Washington, have passed this resolution, and I think it is important for the state of Oregon to also be on that same page for physicians that are traveling with their teams into the state.
I'm Barry Rhodes. I'm a family practice sports medicine physician in Milwaukee, Oregon at Northwest Primary Care. Thank you, committee and Madam Chairman, for hearing my testimony. I'm a member of the AMSSM, American Medical Society for Sports Medicine, and I am giving written testimony in lieu of their transmitted testimony. I strongly support this bill. I have in the past traveled across state lines with collegiate athletics. I feel that a traveling physician, a team physician, serves a very important role. They are there to safeguard the health and safety of the athletes, and having spent time with the players and coaches, I believe they are the best position to provide treatment and make decisions regarding their health. Right now, there's a patchwork of laws governing traveling physician practice. As Dr. Aukerman said, there are many states that do have an exemption for traveling team physicians, including California and Washington. It would be unreasonable and a burden to try and require physicians to obtain medical licenses in every state that they would go to. This is especially a burden if you were traveling with a collegiate team and were going to a certain bowl or NCAA tournament, for example, into a state in which you had no previous knowledge that you would be going to just a week before. I like the bill in that in emergency situations, a licensed physician of Oregon would be required, and this does not affect the public in any way, as the licensed physician would not, as the physician traveling with the team would not treat anyone but the members of the team and immediate family who are not residences of the state of Oregon. And although this does not directly affect me, as I am licensed in the state of Oregon, I think that it is important to look out for our brethren in other states. Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Cruz.
My only question, because it's for 10 days, is that enough time to cover like Olympic trials and stuff like that? Because I'm thinking the athletes are going to be here, you know, because Olympic trials happen in Eugene a lot. And I'm just wondering if it's a broad enough window, they come in ahead of time, and the trials themselves can almost last that long.
Right. There is a provision in the bill to allow for a 21-day permission with request from the board.
So I saw that. Is that an onerous thing to have to go through, or is that?
It is a step, but if you are going to be covering the Olympic trials and track and field, you have enough lead time, okay. As opposed to, you know, any school coming here to spend 3 or 4 days and then leave.
Right. I mean, for most things, that's fine. The Olympic trials kind of popped up for me, and so. Right. Okay.
I think it's difficult if you make it too long of a time. I think the state board's going to object.
Right. Okay.
Senator Steiner Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if you gentlemen know, but I'm a physician as well, and I really support this bill, and I think it's a good idea. And it's very congruent with other bills that we're doing this session to remove unreasonable licensure requirements for professionals coming from other states. I mean, we're doing it for people who do makeup and hair for the film industry, and they're coming in for a very specific purpose to serve a very specific population, just as team physicians are doing. This is really more commentary. I think it's a great bill, and I'm very glad that it's here and really support it. So,
thank you.
It's a good bill.
Any other comments? And this is the only people that were signed up.
Then let's move it.
Okay, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 806 and open a work session on Senate Bill 806.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 806 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 806 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Knapp?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Monson?
Aye. Motion carries. I'll close the public hearing.
And you will carry the bill.
Pardon? Oh, I'll close the work session, sorry, on Senate Bill 806. And I will carry the bill. And thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have you gotten there? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 490. Sandy, bring us up to date.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we had the public hearing on Senate Bill 490 on the 1st of April, which requires an entity advertising and providing specified health services to provide notices and disclosures about the nature of the services. This relates to the crisis pregnancy centers, Madam Chair, and we do have a fiscal and a revenue.
Dash one. So should we move dash one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill.
No.
Move that. Okay. Sorry. I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated April 3rd, 2013 for Senate Bill 490.
Senator Steiner Hayward moves to adopt the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 490. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Madam Clerk should call the roll on that.
Senator Hayward?
Aye.
Senator Hill?
No.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
Chair Monson?
Aye. Motion is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 490 with the dash one amendments without recommendation to the Senate Committee on Rules.
Senator Steiner Hayward moves Senate Bill 490 as amended to the committee, without recommendation to the Senate Committee on Rules. Is there any discussion?
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, like you, I received a couple of letters
regarding legal analysis of this bill. And both these letters basically indicate that they believe it's unconstitutional and that that they would likely sue if the bill was enacted into law. And I think we heard in testimony that the lawsuits in other jurisdictions were successful. And I don't see any reason for this bill to go forward, so I'll be a no.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for a lot of the same reasons as Senator Canope. And we have seen this sort of legislation over and over and over again. And this, and quite honestly, Madam Chair, for attacks like this on institutions like this that do such good work, I find incredibly offensive. And I would prefer that we keep the bill here in this committee and kill it.
Any other discussion? Okay, we are in work session, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hayward?
Aye.
Senator
Knopf? No.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Cruz? No.
Chair
Ronson? Aye. Motion carries, and this bill is being sent to rules. I will close the work session on Senate Bill 490 and open a public hearing on, we don't have Boquist or, so we.
Oh, do we have the senator out front? Yeah, you can go. That would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
You got. What are we doing?
4 and 8:23. Did you open both of them together or just?
No, I haven't opened anything.
Okay. We're doing 8:23 or 4 or which?
Should I do both of them?
Probably not because.
No.
823. Yeah, just let's do 823. They are a package deal, but.
Okay. We're just doing 823 now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Senator Boquist, are you going to do. Which one?
823. Okay. I'm still waiting for the
Senator Boquist.
Right?
Okay, so I could go.
Senator Boquist, you can really clear out a room, you know that?
Done. This one's done.
This one's a big list.
This one is?
Yeah. Let's open this and we'll call Courtney.
Okay, I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 823, and hopefully Senator Courtney,
oh, Courtney,
will get down here.
He was here this minute.
He was
ago.
Here.
Yeah.
I saw him.
He's going to be to the right. He's going to be to the left.
So let's just stand at recess.
I'm Senator Courtney.
No.
Can we stand at recess until Senator
Don't
Courtney
let
gets
that
here?
I said that.
We are we're in a public hearing for Senate Bill 823.
Do we want to do them both together?
Senator Boquist. Do
Thank
we,
you.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Brian Boquist, State Senator, District 12, here with my good colleague from across the aisle, Senator Courtney, on Senate Bill 823. I will first start off with by apologizing. I know that several members of this committee have seen the draft work group or the draft documents that the good senator and I have been working through on a means of improving the state's mental health care system over a 2 to 6 year period of time. It is a work in progress at this time. I think I am scheduled to meet with several of you, all three members who are every other one up there, how appropriate. Later on with Senator Courtney in regards to this, we've been working at this, I think, since January together. It's been a bipartisan effort involving multiple senators on both sides of the aisle. We have indulged the state's time, and we have beat Ms. Hammond about the head and shoulders to come up with some futuristic plans and some things that most people would not think common here because there are some new programs that we're going to end up addressing in the end state of 823, which will probably, of course, be much different than it is right now. With that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Senator Courtney, who has, it looks like, 2, 4, 6, 7, 8 pages of notes.
Thank you, Senator Boquist. My name is Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator, District 11, which is portions, which includes portions of Salem and Jervis and Woodburn. Chair Mona Sanderson, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. I was recently in a meeting just an hour ago where there was nothing but Democrats in it. And it was a very young group, and they asked me, because I've been here so long, can you pick the greatest legislative moment in your career in terms of a piece of legislation? I said, I just, maybe it's a memory issue because I'm so old. I said, I can't. But I said, but what I do recall is I was allowed to have maybe one or two or three moments of pure joy. And it was a situation where all of a sudden Democrat, Republican didn't matter. And you came together in a way that you were fiercely defensive of your brother or sister. And all I'm going to say is I'm an accidental mental health advocate. And it started back in 2005 when, you know, and some of you have heard this, and so I'm going to rush this testimony because I'm going to let Linda speak. When I accidentally, it was a cold day, it was a rainy day, went to state hospital with then Karen Minnis, Speaker of the House, who is very Republican, very conservative, very much different than I am, at least in terms of how people's perception. And we went out there, and because we discovered a nightmare of nightmares in the room of lost souls, the cremains, you all know the history, we just, you could just tell without even making eye contact, because we couldn't speak to each other for 2 days afterwards, nor could anyone else in that when we went out there, that all of a sudden nothing mattered. We were going to build a new hospital. There weren't going to be any deals made. There wasn't going to be any Democrat or Republicans. It wasn't going to be any rural, urban. We were going to get the job done. And I was as powerfully defensive of her and her back as anybody could be on that project, and she of mine. And to this day, it's one of my greatest moments that that's how we operated. I'm on the, perhaps on the verge of having it happen again in my life with the good Senator Brian Boquist. Clearly, he's a different personality than I am. He's rural Oregon. He's a conservative Republican. He's everything that I'm not in a lot of ways. But somehow or other, we're here together about something that's, again, for me, accidental, it's mental health. And I'm not going to go into the extent of the study, except to point out that one of my fellow senators said something to me recently. Yes, Peter, I want to help in mental health, but just not now. And that is the reason. That is the reason that hospital ended up in that condition. The reason I'm accidental this time, last time it was the room of lost souls. This time it was because, and you know I've said this before and Brian's heard this, when Sandy Hook happened, I remember we were here together, don't you remember? That was December 18th. We were having a special session. Yep. Some of you, Senator Knope, you were not here yet. You were going to be here. Everyone else was here during that special session, and the news came from that terrible tragedy. And all of a sudden, I thought, over the weeks, days and weeks since then, I thought, it just seemed to me our country was at battle over guns. Guns, 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 guns. I'm tired of hearing about guns. And every time they talked about guns, they ended up saying, oh, by the way, we should do something about mental health. You know, mental health was, you know, every group, whether regardless of which side, mental health, mental health. And I just got mad and said, all right, I've had enough. We're going to do something about mental health. We're not going to do something about mental health, Senator Boquist, not just because of Sandy Hook. Oh, no, no. You know, what about this whole criminal justice thing we're talking about? You know, what about people just living everyday lives? What about the number of people who are in this room today that wouldn't want to talk about it that have mental illness in their families or with their friends? If you knew some of the people that serve with you that have mental illness problems that I'm aware of, you would be stunned. You would be stunned. The most stunning interview I've ever had was when I had a press availability on this, and we were through. Everybody waited to leave except for one major editorial writer in the state. And he said, Peter, can I ask you a question? Are you mentally ill? And, you know, it might sound funny, and I drop my, no, not that I know of. I've not been diagnosed. He said, well, I am mentally ill. I'm bipolar. My son's bipolar. And he's crying. He was crying. He's a hardcore editorial writer. He was crying. Well, what Senator Boquist and I are trying to do is develop a statewide approach. And the specifics are horrific. I'm just going to give you one program, and then I'm going to turn it over to Linda, because I think it underscores something about the magnitude of what I'm talking about. And Senator Brian Boquist is ahead of me. He's ahead of me on this because I haven't been able to go to my caucus yet. I haven't even given my caucus yet. And it's killing me. He's gone to his caucus, which in a way I'm glad. He and I would like to go to every caucus in this building. He and I would like to make this pitch as we could, because if it's Democrat Republican, stop it right here. Don't do another thing. If it's rural urban, stop it right here. Don't do another thing. Don't. Because as you're going to see, the one program that I'm trying to find here, it's called the ESA program. Now, all you know about the ESA program, right? Well, I didn't know about the ESA program. I'm still learning about the ESA program. In fact, you know, I'm still learning what I'm promoting. I don't even understand the magnitude of this bill. You all do, because you're all in this committee. ESA. ESA is a program where it provides, here's the thing. I'm just going to give it, for example, here we have Josh, a 14-year-old boy, sees his primary care doctor, confides that he's hearing voices, and he's scared. The doctor can make one phone call, and within 24 hours, each team member will connect with the patient's family to get Josh counseling, medication, and peer support. Basically, it's a SWAT team of mental health people that move in just like that when that call is made to help that kid. The family will also be assisted with how to best interact with Josh to help him cope and get back to health. Well, that's interesting about ESA. Here's the number of kids. Right here, and you can't see it. Well, maybe you can. This is the number of counties where ESA is. It's 15 counties. We have 36 counties in our state. It doesn't exist in counties like Baker, Joseph, Wheeler, Crook, Harney, Douglas, Lincoln. It doesn't exist. Which means kids in those areas, just at the ESA program, kids in those areas, their parents have to get them in the car, and they have to drive for hours, maybe through the nights, to get to the valley, someplace to get help. Are the children in eastern Oregon or on the coast or in the southern part of the state, do they suffer any less because they're not in the valley? How come the kids in the valley, and I'm from the valley, I want my kids taken care of, but I want your kids taken care of. I want the kids across the state. Just ESA alone. If we fully implemented ESA alone, the impact would be incredible. But that's just the beginning of the programs. And I'm not making this up. So it's very simple. I'm really honored. I wanted Senator Brian Boquist to go first. I wanted him to speak first. I want to be associated with him on this and with Linda Hammond. Because when it's all said and done, either we're in this together or it cannot happen. And so I really thank you, Chair, Lori Montes-Anderson, for letting this talk about this. This is the first time we've had this presentation since we stumbled on it in our own sort of way back in February, and he and I found each other in the night. I don't know what brings Brian to this. I told you what brought me to it. I've never asked him, Brian, why are you so interested in this? Why are you so interested? It's strange. Strange, I will tell you. The number of lives that are affected by mental illness is unbelievable. Now I'm going to leave you one thing. Remember when I told you that editorial writer asked me if I had mental health? You know what I did? I jumped. I said, no. And then I said, Peter, why did you jump and say no? Do you know why I jumped and drew back and said no? There was only two people in the room. Why did I do that? Stigma. It occurred to me, the stigma. Oh, well, I don't know. Did you know? It was stigma that made me jump. And I'm supposed to know it would be cool, right? I'm supposed to not have stigma. It was stigma that made me jump in front of him. Then I said, Peter, there it is. The stigma of mental health. You don't, no, I don't, no, I'm not, I've never diagnosed. You know, if you'd asked me if I had, you know, have you had cancer or some other physical ailment, I don't think I'd jump. I said, well, no, I've never had that. But not when he asked me about mental illness. That was very revealing to me, very powerful statement to me, that this stigma thing is as much of a problem, and the only way we can deal with it is if we develop the statewide program now. No other state's trying to do what we're trying to do. No other state is trying to do. No other state has the state hospital that we now have. No other state. But that's just the state hospital. We're not touching 45% of the young people in this state. There's all that we're touching and dealing with in mental health. Excuse me, 35. You're touching 45% of the adults. You're only getting to 35% of the kids in this state that need mental health services, and 45% of the adults. Isn't it interesting? We're getting more of the adults than we are the kids. That's all. So I will beg you to at least look at this, because individually and collectively, this is where the power is in this committee. If this committee will take this on, then I can tell you, we got a chance. We got a shot, I think, at really breaking through on this. So again, I feel strongly about it. I am an accidental mental health advocate. I don't have your training. I don't have your smarts. I'm still learning what's in eight to this bill. I still don't even know the magnitude of this bill. I know what this charts, there's visual aids. We have an expert here like no other in the nation. She is the guru behind the state hospital. So with that, Chair, if I would, I'd like to turn it over to Linda Hammond and have her start to go into details. And I know that you've heard some of this. Of course, Senator Hayward has heard some of it, Senator Knope has heard some of it, Senator Cruz has heard of it. Senator Shields, you have not, unfortunately. I mean, I must say that to you. I'm not picking on you. It's just that I have not gone before the Senate Democratic Caucus yet. The others have had some part of this. But, Senator, you haven't even heard of it. I don't think I've heard the magnitude of what she's going to talk about. So thank you.
Chairman Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Linda Hammond, and I'm the Interim Director for Addictions and Mental Health. What you have before you in Senate Bill 823 is not just something that we come to quickly or lightly. When I was asked by Senator Courtney and then by Senator Bates to look at what's needed in the mental health...
Boquist, wasn't it? Was it Boquist or Bates?
Excuse me, Boquist.
Yes,
I'm sorry.
Please. Jeez, it's my brother. It's my brother. My brother, don't do that to my brother. My wingman.
All those B names. We got a lot of those in the Senate.
We know you're under pressure.
I don't know why. when I came to this and was asked to put this together by the two senators, I went back to work that has been going on for a long time. As Senator Courtney said, I was involved from the beginning of the concept with the State Hospital Replacement Project. And back when we did the master plan, we recognized at that point there needed to be a significant investment in community mental health. We called together a community services work group of many members across the entire state, and we asked the question, what needed to be how did we need to reinvest? What did we need to improve? And that's back as early as the work beginning in 2005. And as of this time, we've made very limited investments in those areas that were recognized. And while we've seen this great move forward with the improvement at the state hospital, we have not seen the same growth in our community mental health system. We've been struggling to maintain the status quo, in many cases woefully falling short because of both the increase in population but also the increase in costs, which we are again trying to manage through various mechanisms. And what this bill presents to you is a whole strategy across the spectrum of education and working with our communities to talk with parents, talk with schools, talk with our physicians and work with them and support them to helping support mental health amongst our children. It also works with our system for adults, which we know has been struggling under many challenges, including the need for housing, for peer support services, for additional wraparound services that really help people when they're struggling with mental health. We know that not the only solution is not a medical solution, but we need to support medical solutions with other types of services that help people really navigate the system and be successful in their own homes. We've continued to work on our Aim High area and make sure that people are moving as quickly through the system and having a key to their own front door. And the components of this bill before you are grouped, and they're grouped in a way to look at 0 to 25. But then we also have pulled out some specific programs that are specific to adolescent ages, which again go from 18 to 25, and cross multiple types of age groups. And then we also have an area that focuses in on adults and also on seniors, because all of these populations have suffered from this lack of funding, this equal opportunity to receive mental health care, how they need it in their own communities, and make them more successful. In many cases, keeping them out of the system altogether so they don't end up in our jails and in our hospitals, and also helping them, should they get there, to quickly become viable parts of their community again, which is what they want. And there are many facets of this bill. For our young adults programs, where Senator Courtney has talked about ESA, and then we have the young adult community hubs which build upon the ESA program. That's a new program. The young adult support groups, these bolster our youth who really need those connections that they can't get. And I could go through the list. I have two pages here of the lists of all the different facets of the bill. But I can assure you that each one of them was carefully thought about, was looked at in a way by the community services work group in the large conceptual way, and then by the agency in a way of how do we implement this in a timely manner, in a phased approach that really gets us to the point of having a fully funded system, while we're also thinking about the implementation of the CCOs and how we connect with physical and mental health together to ensure we're maximizing our federal dollars and making sure we're getting the connection so that we ensure that not only mentally, folks are not only mentally healthy, but they're physically healthy as well. And making sure we maximize on other dollars, such as the Medicaid expansion and other service dollars as they come along. We need to be ensure we're being good stewards of state money as we do that. We also need to be accountable. We need to put in a system that we that can assure you that we're really achieving that work and we're achieving it locally with local involvement, but with various insurances that we're using evidence-based practices and we're using approaches that really can move the system in a thoughtful manner. I'm happy to answer any questions on the details of the bill if you have any specifics.
Specifically, is it a clean bill? I mean, we have the possibility of moving it today, and I was hoping for no amendments.
I do not see at this time the agency putting forward any amendments.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Steiner Hayward.
I will freely admit this is more of a comment than a question to all three of you, and I want to thank you. If we move this bill and do this right, I believe that 10, 15 years from now, people will look back and say that this is one of the top pieces of legislation to come out of this session. As a primary care physician, this is something that I've struggled with my entire career, is access to appropriate mental health services for my patients. But that brings me to my only concern, significant concerns about this. Not with the programs as described in this, because I love every single one of them, and we've had separate conversations about this. I'm worried about workforce. I'm really worried about workforce. We worry about primary care workforce in the state, and we worry about mental health workforce in the state. We can have all these programs all we want, and if we don't have the right people on the ground to implement them, we're going nowhere fast. And I'm also really worried about integration with primary care. For too long, we've done what I call colloquially chopping people off at the neck. And there have been these firewalls between mental health providers and physical health providers that have made it incredibly difficult for me to do my job. If I have a patient who's getting care from a gastroenterologist about their inflammatory bowel disease, I pick up the phone and I call them and the doctor tells me anything and they fax me notes because it's all completely covered under HIPAA. If I have a patient with paranoid schizophrenia, I have to get multiple releases signed on both sides to even have a conversation with their mental health provider. That's the stigma that President Courtney was referring to, and that's something that we have to include as a critical piece of making this work. Because until we treat mental illness just like any other physical illness, until, as we know it is, paranoid schizophrenia is treated just like diabetes because it's a chemical disorder of the brain instead of the pancreas, we're going to get nowhere fast on this. Until it's as easy for me to pick up the phone and call my patient's mental health providers and have a professional-to-professional conversation about how we can work as a team, the kind of team that President Courtney described in the ESA, we're going nowhere with this, and we will not accomplish the extraordinary goals that are laid out in this great piece of legislation. I'm completely committed to working with anybody and everybody on this in any way that I can. I think it's great legislation. I just think we have to be really sure to be crystal clear about those two issues. And I say that only in the spirit of wanting to make a great bill really work. Not because I have any criticism for what's in here. I have nothing but compliments for everything in here. I just want to make sure we really cover those two concerns.
Madam Chair, Senator Steiward, let me address them and back up a little bit how we got here. When we started down the road on this topic, and as Senator Courtney said, you know, Sandy Hook came up. At the same exact day, there were 22 Chinese children injured in a mass knife attack. Mm-hmm. Today, there's a report coming out of Texas. There's 11 more children. You've seen the floor letters that have come across from veterans, PTSD, rural mental health care issues. I have the distinct pleasure or unpleasure of sitting on the Oregon Homeland Security Council, so I get to see all the rest of the other glorious reports that everybody else doesn't see that happen across the state. And both sides said, hey, we need to do something. And the first thing was, okay, let's race out and do a bill. Let's run down the road. And the very first question we sat around the table, which is why Ms. Hammond got involved in this, is like, okay, you can't get there from here. Let's just say you throw $300 million of this tomorrow. You can't get there from here. You need to have a six-year plan for exactly the reasons you said. You can only do so much now. You put the first brick in, the second brick in, you build the first program, and then what happens is how do you do your workforce development? How do you reach out to the communities? You don't get people on the far side or even in the urban, tight urban areas of this to buy into mental health care because of the stigmatism without time. And so what we said is, look, you can have a bill which says this is the goal, and we know it's going to take us about 6 years to get it. And then you step through those phases, which, of course, why there's referral to Ways and Means, and you look at each piece and say, how long does it take it to build it? The reason this isn't, I would say, prime time and hadn't been all the caucuses quicker is the simple fact that we went back and said, hey, we have to know that if you put in $10 million this year, $20 million in this program, or $30 million in that, what do you have to invest 2 years from now? How many doctors are going to be there? How many clinical psychologists are going to be there? How many counties are going to buy into this? How many regional groups are going to be formed with this? And so we've kind of marched this down, unfortunately, like a military thing, and I know the good Senator Courtney wanted to race forward, but we said, hold up, hold the horses up here, and let's walk through this and develop a policy for once in this building, a policy that says over the next 6 years, this is what we want to do, and then you start incrementally funding it as you go along over the next year periods. And every topic that you raised, we have had discussions behind. We've gone back and, you know, cut more trees down and made more PowerPoint slides and lost more data in the electronic DAS system when it crashes to make this come out in a program where it's going to go. I think the answer to the good chair is that the bill isn't going to get any better, but, of course, everybody knows you've got to put the funding pieces together, you've got to put the incremental pieces together, so on and so forth like that. With that, I'm going to let Ms. Hammond address a couple of your specific questions, Madam Senator.
Chair Monsanto and Senator Steiner Hayward, we, you and I have had discussions on the data system and how we need to better integrate, and the agency is very clear on that, and as you know, we're moving forward on that. We take it very, very seriously that you have to be able to treat the whole person, and that means you have to know what that whole person needs. So we do take under advisement and are actively working right now on implementing our system and working with our CCOs to make sure we have that real, really fully accountable integrated system that can share data in real time. So it definitely is something that we realize we can't be successful without. So, and then regarding the workforce development, one of the reasons that the bill is put together in a six-year time frame is to look at how we continue to develop the resources we need as part of the funding package before you to develop the programs and to develop the resources to carry them out and to be able to meet any commitment we make to you. We realize, the agency realizes, the state, and I've very clearly committed that we understand at this time, as in any other time, funds are extremely limited. Investments like this, with this sort of commitment from leadership, come across our desks very rarely. So we have to ensure that we provide for you what we say we're going to. So our accountability piece, our development piece, and our movement forward are taken very seriously by the agency, and we will be working with all our partners to address those needs.
Senator Steiner.
Looks like President Courtney wanted to say something. Did
you? Well, I wish you hadn't, Senator Hayward, Chairman, I wish that you hadn't said what you said, because now, I'm glad you said it, but there's someone I really respect who knows mental health issues. There's a serious mental health issue with one of her relatives. And I showed this to her earlier, and she says, Peter, you're going to get your heart broken, because the state hospital was a single facility. What you're trying to do, if you could even do half of it, you're going to get your heart broken. And she said, I'm going to tell you why. The groups out there that are going to come after this thing, want this money, want this, are going to go all over the place. And you're not going to be able to administer it. That's the struggle. You need a czar. You need a dictator. Because I'll tell you, you heard from Senator Boquist. I just care about one thing. That kid in Eastern Oregon, that poor veteran, that individual who's struggling with in a domestic relationship, that's all I care about is if we're going to do these programs, they're all there. They'll put people in our schools. They'll put people in our neighborhoods. They'll put people in our hospitals. We will be able to do something nobody else does. What I'm terrified is they won't get to them. And that's what she said. You're going to get your heart broken. Because what you're going to find, because when we put this together, we pretty much put it together in a vacuum. I did it deliberately. I did it deliberately. Because I know what's going to happen. And that's got me very frightened, very, very concerned. Because this is we're very serious about this. And our bottom line is that poor person who's suffering with mental illness. I'm telling you, that's it. And I'm not going to be happy if I'm still alive and we take a bold step and I find out that certain people aren't getting services because of bureaucracy or because of territorial battles or the egos of certain people in this whole area of mental health. I'm just going to make that statement right here and now. And your question or your statement, unfortunately, brings back the fear that I'm going to get my heart broken on this thing. I wish Linda Hamm had been a little bit stronger because I pushed her hard. And I thought she was going to be stronger than she was because she told me things in my offices that this thing is going to be taken very, very seriously. I have talked to the governor very pointedly about this. Very pointedly about this. I am not fooling around. I am not going to be a nice guy on this program if you decide you want to do this. I am not going to be a nice guy. The services are going to get there, and they're going to get there when we say we're going to get there, and it's going to be fully implemented in 6 years, and there will be no excuses. So I'm sorry, but that is what your comment. I wasn't planning to say that here today, but then unfortunately, you made your statement. I'm glad you made it. I wasn't going to speak, but that's how strongly I feel about this program. I don't want any clapping. I don't want any clapping.
Yeah. Rebuttal? Okay.
Well, not a rebuttal.
We have a lot of people to testify.
Okay.
This Senator Cruz.
Okay. There's a lot unsaid here and a lot of things that need to be connected. I fully understand that. I appreciate this. We have, some of us in this building, have been advocating for community-based mental health for a long time, and it's been shouting in the wind. And maybe this will get us some action. My question is, what I don't see in this bill is a structure for the legislative assembly to have oversight over how this moves forward. And I would suggest that that would be a very good addition to this. I don't want to just hand this off to the health authority. I want us as a legislative assembly to be fully engaged as we're moving forward in this. Just a suggestion.
Chairman, he's right. You're right.
We have oversight through ways.
We have
Oversight through ways and means isn't good enough. Oversight you know how we do this, mm-hmm. Mr. President, and that's and it needs to be structured. It needs to be spelled out.
He's right.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, distinguished members of the committee, you're absolutely correct. And you know where we are in the process is we have the policy framework, and the regulatory piece and oversight needs to be put in, and then I don't need to remind everybody then the funding piece. And behind the scenes, we've all had these discussions. All but right. This will completely fail, mm-hmm. if it doesn't have ironclad legislative oversight on it. And the reason mm-hmm. being is that anytime you put additional revenue or additional funds into any program, it becomes a food fight. And what we want to prevent in this particular case is the whole goal of the program is community-based, pushing it to the lowest level, forcing mm-hmm. local counties in Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, mm-hmm. the Oregon coast to work sure. together yep. to draw on those resources and push every resource we have available at the state down to that level instead of us turning around and always turning around and saying, Salem, come help us. Because if you don't know, 90% of these to 95% of all of these services are provided by nonprofits out in our communities. And many of you have seen the list, and if you look at some of the communities, it is dire. We have entire 3 and 4 section counties that have 1 or 2 service providers. And I can tell you right now, sitting in those communities are large elements of the Oregon Army National Guard that have made 2 and 3 deployments overseas. And those guys and those gals are coming all the way to the valley, if they come at all, to get help. If they come at all. And likewise, you have the families that are out there in rural Oregon. So, I mean, it is a work in progress. We all know what happens when you send things to Ways and Means. It's a work in progress. The regulatory piece needs to put in. The funding piece needs to be agreed upon, and it needs to be adopted. And the final stage as it comes out is a six-year plan.
Okay, what I would like to do is it would be nice if you could draft an amendment for legislative oversight. We only have four more meetings, so we probably will not be able to have the amendment incorporated into the bill if we don't get a fiscal. But I'd like that to be started, and if we can't finish it within our committee structured time frame, it can be finished in Ways and Means.
Or in rules. So.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you very much, panel.
Thanks.
I would like to now call Dr. Pollack and Dave Underreiner.
And while you're doing that, I'm going to call. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Pollack. I'm a psychiatrist. You may have a copy of my report, my testimony. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I need to establish that I've been around for a long time. I trained here in the 70s. I've been probably the psychiatrist most involved with the community and public mental health system for most of that 40 years, and in a lot of different ways. I was the public psychiatrist in Portland and Multnomah County for a number of years, was the medical director for the Mid-Valley Behavioral Care Network when they started the ESA program, and I have been the medical director for the state's Addiction and Mental Health Division. I work at OHSU. I do policy. I teach with Senator Steiner Hayward and work in family medicine. Some may consider me more the Forrest Gump of community mental health in Oregon. But people here also know me as Sasha's dad. What I'd like to say is that, as Senator Courtney so eloquently said, we've got a lot of problems: the overcrowding of the hospitals, the under-resourced community system, the trans-institutionalization, if you will, into the correction system that has a lot of people with mental health problems there, fully 20% or more, not including those who have substance abuse problems. Really, and then the tragedy of these mass shootings and other problems point out that our system's broken. It's fragmented and broken. We need to do something about it. These provisions in this bill will, I think, go a great distance to doing that. I agree with what Senator Steiner Hayward was saying about the significance of the bill. Let me summarize in a slightly different way than Linda did about what the bill does. It basically restores some programs that have been dramatically cut in the prior two or three recessions and that were starting to come back until the next recession. It augments programs that were in certain parts of the state, like the early psychosis program, and expands them to the entire state. And then it adds new programs that are based on both the best contemporary thinking and evidence-based research for improving and expanding some of the services to folks, adults and children, and various age groups and geographic groups to fill the gaps that we have recognized are there. And in some ways, some of the early childhood and child and family prevention provisions dovetail nicely with the Safe Families legislation that was passed in 2010 that Senator Courtney had sponsored. So I think...
And I have to tell you, we have quite a few people.
I'm not going to read the whole thing.
And so I like to limit everyone to about 2 to 3 minutes.
Okay. I will just summarize the key points. Actually, Senator Steiner Hayward brilliantly brought up my main points.
Because you've trained me well, Dr.
Yes. My concerns have to do with workforce and integration of behavioral health and primary care. I'm on the State Healthcare Workforce Committee. I'm the only mental health person on that committee. We're very acutely concerned about how we will get enough workers, how we will train them, how we will have their competencies match what the state needs. This bill really doesn't fully address that, at least as I read it, but we need to pay attention to that. Our committee recommendations to the Health Policy Board included there needs to be some kind of healthcare workforce impact statement that any big initiative like this would have associated with it. In terms of integration, I can say that for mental health to be integrated into primary care, into the primary care homes that we're developing and implementing throughout the state, it's extremely important that we have the right mix of providers and that we have to provide the right training to them. Until we change some of the payment methods to allow, for example, psychiatrists to do consultation with primary care providers, as opposed to just doing direct patient care, we're not going to be able to have the right mix and the right things done. You can read my entire testimony. I'd be glad to answer questions. Some of these things, I will finally say, dovetail nicely with how the CCOs are operating or will be operating. The new Center for Health Systems Transformation that was just launched last week may be the vehicle through which some of the technical assistance and the linkage between the Addictions Mental Health Division and the training programs and the CCOs can be used to address some of the concerns that Senator Steiner Hayward was raising. In addition to the one thing that I think would be good to add to the bill would be an adult version of the Opal K program that you're going to hear about, and either through this bill or through something else, and I think the Senator Steiner Hayward may have a bill that it could work with, and that is to figure out a way to get more telepsychiatry consultation links to the rural and frontier areas. Okay. Those are things that can be addressed. Thank you.
All right, and I am going to set a timer, so when you hear a sonar, you know that your time is up. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. I'm Dave Undreiner. I'm the incoming chief executive for Providence Health Services here in Oregon, and I've been with Providence for 29 years and over 20 years working with our behavioral health program as part of our my responsibilities. Have a deep passion for it and appreciate the opportunity to be here. You have our testimony in front of you. The key points there is this is really good, a great opportunity for us to really look at creating more comprehensive mental health services, and obviously you'll go through this whole process. I participated over 10 years ago in a group here that looked at this, developed very similar kind of recommendations. The key here is that the professionals understand and have knowledge about how we can create a comprehensive mental health program. The key is, do we have the wherewithal and the fortitude to make those kind of changes? I can remember we even talked about closing down inpatient mental health if you have a comprehensive community-based program in place. You don't need that because you have the right access points for people with acute illness getting stabilized and moved into the right kind of settings. So we are very supportive of the work that's going on here, understanding the challenges that exist with behavioral health services. I know we've committed many resources to supporting programs, working with other nonprofit organizations in the community. Again, I think there's great opportunity for things to happen. I just think we're doing telemedicine with telepsych. The very kind of services that we're talking about, they work well. I think there's opportunities with payers to make things work differently as well. We also see the fragmentation of the system and what happens. You can come into one of our emergency rooms in Providence or any other emergency room on any given day. You will see anywhere from 10 to 15 patients waiting for care, waiting sometimes 4, 5, 6 days. We do not do that to anybody, any other patient population. That's just one example of many in terms of what the fragmented system does. So we have great opportunity here. We're very supportive. I think the CCOs create one framework, not the framework, but one framework for making it happen. As Providence, we're very interested in being supportive and being involved as an organization in the work that will be undertaken to make this happen.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Felisa Otis, Chris Burley, Kevin McChesney. Please proceed.
Welcome to AT&T's teleconference service. Please enter your access code, followed by the pound sign.
Just go ahead.
Okay. Chair Monis Anderson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Kevin McChesney, and I represent ORPA, the Oregon Residential Providers Association, and I will be very brief. I have been working in the area of adult mental health since 1991 in this state, and during all of that time, The need for mental health services has been funded at around 50%, and so I'm very pleased that we're finally talking about funding it at a level that's really more appropriate to the need. This is a significant. There's a significant combination of events that I think is important to recognize. One being healthcare transformation that people have mentioned, and really the revenue part of the equation for mental health is really a very small element of the total dollar value. But in fact, there is a significant risk associated with the treatment of people with severe mental illness, and we really need to recognize that and to make sure that that's addressed. Secondly, I think, and nobody's mentioned this yet, but the Department of Justice is watching very carefully what our investment is in community mental health in this state, and they've let us off easy for the first few years by focusing on metrics, but I think they're perfectly willing to come back in a number of years and really look carefully at what we've invested in the system, and maybe be a little more directive about those investment opportunities. Lastly, the other thing that that I've been concerned about for a while is the fact that in January of 2014, we're going to add 200,000+ people to the Medicaid rolls. And if we don't start making an investment now in some of that infrastructure, I'm really concerned that we're not going to be able to meet the needs of those individuals when they're added to the rolls. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. All right.
Actually, we can't meet the needs of those we currently have, so it'd be easy to assume we can't meet an expanded need.
Felisa Otis and Chris Burley, are you on the phone? Felisa, would you introduce yourself? And we're limiting everyone to 2 to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Absolutely. Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Otis. I'm the mother of Keaton Otis, and I appreciate the time I have to testify on behalf of this bill and our support of this bill. My son Keaton Otis in 2008 experienced a psychotic episode, and for 2 years we were challenged to find him any kind of help and support out in the community that was specific for a young man, a young African-American man who ideally was at a point where he was going to hurt himself or someone else. 4 days before he died, we were left with the option of doing a civil commitment, which meant that if I did that, then most likely we probably wouldn't see him again because he wouldn't trust us anymore. Or possibly him getting services that were not appropriate, and then he would not ever want to be helped again. So I am joined with Chris Burley, who I'll let speak, to talk about and support of the Senate bill, and specifically ESA, and that the services and the way they deliver services, I believe, would have been appropriate for Keaton at that time, and I also believe would have made a difference for him in the long run. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris to speak the rest of it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Introduce
yourself. Madam Chair and members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Christopher Burley, and I'm a community member and also a police officer in the city of Portland. I'm here to share my story. On May 12, 2010, near Lloyd Center, I assisted officers in performing a traffic stop on a vehicle driven by Keaton Otis. At the time of the stop, officers did not know Keaton Otis was experiencing a mental health crisis. Keaton would not and likely was unable to follow the commands of the officers during the traffic stop because of his mental health crisis. Shortly after being stopped, Keaton retrieved and fired a handgun and struck me in the legs 2 times. Officers responded, shooting Keaton multiple times, ultimately leading to the death of Keaton. Later, I would find out Keaton was diagnosed with schizophrenia, and his family had attempted on multiple occasions to get him assistance. Afterwards, I was left asking many questions. I feel one of the most important questions that I thought of is, what if Keaton and Keaton's family had received assistance at the initial onset of Keaton's mental illness? Would May 12, 2010 have ended the way it did? As I reflect back on May 12, 2010, I often think of those affected by the inadequacies of the mental health care system in Oregon. Months after this incident, as I was working on patrol at the mobile crisis unit in downtown Portland, I sat down for coffee with a man who was diagnosed with bipolar disorder and schizophrenia, and oftentimes had violent outbursts in the Old Town area of Portland. This man who lives in downtown Portland told me, "I live in a city of over 1 million people, that every day I wake up, I feel like I am alone." I believe this is an opportunity for us to tell people and to show people that have mental illness that they are not alone. We must offer persons and families affected by mental illness compassionate and effective assistance. I don't think that we should ever allow anybody to experience what the Otis has felt. And I, along with Felisa, believe that ESA is a program that has been shown to work and lends that support that families need, and lets other Oregonians know that we are not going to let you travel a very difficult journey with mental illness alone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? All right. Thank you very much for testifying. I'd like to call up Cindy Becker, Chris Bonnet, and Cheryl Ramirez. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Cindy Becker, and I'm the Director of Health, Housing, and Human Services for Clackamas County. The first thing I want to say is I never thought I would utter these words. I love Peter Courtney. This bill is something that all of us in the field of human services, health and human services, have thought about for a long time, and we think it is really spot on. There's a couple of things that I would like to mention that have been talked about, but I think are worth repeating. The first is the issue of stigma. We've got to stop talking about mental illness with the people in the room. We have to start talking about this with people in chambers of commerce, with employers, with the animal clubs, with the grocers. We often preach this to the same people who we work with every day, and we've got to get it outside of our circles. The issue of stigma not only is something that is the right thing to do in terms of getting over it, but it's the reason people don't seek treatment. You don't want to say, my kid has a mental illness. If you have a mental illness, you don't want to tell other people about it. So it's one of the reasons that people don't seek care as early as they need to. Okay.
Only you, Cindy.
Yeah, okay, fine.
It's common in this community.
All right, fine. So the other thing that I also want to comment on is integration. We talk about integrating mental health into primary care. It is as important to integrate primary care into mental health. People with severe and persistent mental illness typically are not going to be going to a primary care clinic for services. We have to bring the medical community to their health home, which is the mental health provider. And so we spent a lot of time talking about moving mental health folks into primary care. We really need to focus on that portion of the population. Like with physical health, those individuals who have the most severe need are also costing the most money. And those individuals are the same people who have significant physical health problems. We have to change the model for those individuals when we're talking integration. The other piece that I want to talk about is the data exchange. We've all talked about how important it is to be able to share health information. We continue to have the issue with sharing the inability to share addictions information. That's a federal law. It's 42 CFR, and I know that folks at the state level are going to be talking with our federal delegation, and I urge the legislature to also talk about this and bring this up. We can share information about everything without someone's consent when it deals with treatment, payment, or care coordination. That's not true of addictions. That's a federal law that we really need to work on. Last but not least, I also want to talk about my gratitude for the inclusion of the aging population in this legislation. We talk a lot about kids. We talk a lot about young adults. The seniors in our population have significant mental health and addictions issues, so I want to thank Peter and also Senator Boquist for that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Really quickly, I'm going to take something of a risk here, but I think it's an important one. I've had plenty of opportunities in this committee to tell people that I have multiple sclerosis, and a lot of times people look at me and say, "You do?" Because I've been very fortunate. And I've received appropriate medical care, and I've tried to take care of myself. I've never had a opportunity to say publicly that I have mental illness. I have major depression. I've been treated for it for 15 years. And when I take my antidepressants the way I'm supposed to, it's just like a diabetic taking their insulin. And it lets me be here to serve my state, to serve my patients. And I bet there's a gazillion people who are looking at this right now saying, "Really? Really?" But I can tell you that if I go 2 days without taking my medication, I can't walk in the door of this building. I can't get up in the morning. I can't take a shower. I can't function as a normal human being. So, stigma be damned. Excuse my language. It's no different that I have a biochemical disorder in my brain than my body is choosing to attack my myelin and give me multiple sclerosis. It's genetic, and it's just like any other disease. And we got to stop being afraid to say so publicly, and I'm doing that right here, right now. And I don't give a damn what anybody thinks.
Thank you, Senator.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, I'm Chris Bonaf. I'm with the state chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We're an organization composed of those of us living with illness ourselves or having family members with major mental illness. And in a sense, we're the people everybody's talking about wanting to help. It's nice to be coming in from the wilderness this year. We're one of the organizations that has been there for decades fighting for funding because we know the effect it can have on the well-being and health of our population. And so I'm very grateful for Senator Courtney and Senator Boquist for bringing this to attention this year. It's unfortunate the circumstances by which it comes forward, and I do want to make sure that I would be remiss if I didn't remind folks that we can fund all the mental health we want, but we probably will not prevent mass tragedies. There's not very little correlation between the two. But we will do other things. I want to address a point. There are plenty of things this bill doesn't do. I think it's naive to think that if we appropriate money for ESA that somehow in our less populous areas we're going to have the same ESA that we have in the Valley. We don't have the workforce development. Certainly we don't have the workforce even in the Valley. We don't have a lot of the support services. We don't have the integration. I've been in primary care where I was misdiagnosed and not treated properly and not referred to the proper mental health services. I've been with mental health providers who wouldn't talk to my primary care physician. I've been in clinics where you have mental health professionals and physical health professionals working side by side, but they don't play nicely together. There's plenty in this system that this bill doesn't do, and that's because of centuries of neglect. But when you have nothing, you have to start somewhere, and this bill starts us somewhere, finally. We in the state have done this in fits and starts, and it seems every time we gain momentum, we suffer some economic collapse in which the health care of those with mental health needs suffers first. And so we're grateful that the conversation has shifted. It's shifted to, where are we going to make an investment, and over what type of term are we going to make an investment so that we can achieve two things. One, with children, we can begin to shut down the pipeline of those who reach adulthood with untreated mental illness and burden our adult system. And then I hope we don't forget about the adults and seniors who are there already because of that neglect, to whom we owe a debt of full treatment, of housing, of the type of support services that can bring people to a level of recovery. Because, again, one of the misnomers is if you go through life 10, 20, 30 years with untreated schizophrenia, for example, that you can't achieve recovery. That's a falsehood. every piece of research coming out now that's looking into adults and the types of cognitive therapies we have demonstrate that regardless of what age you are, we can be effective in treating it. So I am very grateful for the attention being paid to this issue, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee. I'm Cheryl Ramirez. I'm the director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Program. Our association represents directors of county-based community mental health programs and health and human services departments. For the purposes of brevity, I'm just going to read quickly my written testimony. Recent tragedies have generated an exceptionally important dialogue between the community behavioral health system and federal, state, and local governments. We wholeheartedly support the program priorities for children, youth, and adults outlined in this bill. The focus on prevention, early detection, and intervention will lead to lower incidence of dropping out of school, criminal justice involvement, and incarceration, hospitalization, suicide, and homicide. We understand that an important facet of ensuring successful outcomes is to work across systems with education, public safety, child welfare, and public health, and alongside community stakeholders, families, primary care providers, faith-based entities, and not-for-profit organizations. We look forward to increasing awareness, reducing stigma, and providing the most appropriate care for individuals and families dealing with mental health and addictions problems in our communities. The significant investment in community mental health programs and services proposed in this bill is reliant on considerable funding enhancement. AOCMHP awaits the proposed sources of public and private funds that will be necessary for these plans to materialize. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 823. Many thanks to Senator Courtney for introducing this groundbreaking legislation, and many thanks to Senator Steiner Hayward for making our point on stigma. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All right. With that, I'd like to call up Terrell Schwartz, Susan Salkiel, and David Hidalgo. Please introduce.
It's not a bill. It's the experiment that I have.
Say your name, please.
A few years ago.
Can you say your name?
It has to do with the...
You need to say your name.
Statistical handicap people came from Fairview.
David, can you say your name in the microphone?
Huh?
Can you just say your name in the microphone? What's your name?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm Paul Schwartz.
Okay.
And I... Terrible. This is not a bad, this is part of the experiment that I have throughout the whole... 4 years, and lot of physical people disabled. I went through, and it had something to do with Fairview, and it had something to do with a group home. There's a lot of different disabled people out there. Now, the experience I had, we had a called South Africa, okay? It had something to do with the people get on job. It had something to do with the right. It had something to do with the to meet other people, other different disabled people out there. And I have met a lot of them out there. A lot of different disabled people I met. We went through a lot of experience throughout the many years. I met a lot of the one on the community, I met a lot of one, towards Fairview. Fairview, a lot of that out there. Now they're not there anymore. They're out. A lot of in the group home, they're a lot of out. my experience, what you get to see someday, I have a film they put out 30, 40 years ago. They had it made up through the People First. People First Association, the people got together, have our meeting, have our convention we went through so many years. And I had to be one of them. So I got to go see the, so I got to travel different places through all these conferences I got to go. I went to Japan. They had disabled people there. You didn't know about, you probably didn't know about. The people over the world, disabled. I'm not part of the film. I hope you get to see someday. Some people got to see it, some didn't. I part in that film, and there's a lot more to it, which you see, you are talking about today, disabled people, okay? So this is something I just wanted to let you know. It's an experience I went through throughout the many years.
Thank you very much,
so Terrell. I just want to let you know that.
Thank you very much.
Okay?
Thank you.
So I just want to let you know, and so you know what's, so if you want to find out more about it, you know, and this way it will pull you most through your experience, and so we know what we went through that many years.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm Susan Salkild, Safe Schools Healthy Students Director, Tigard Tualatin School District. I'm here to support the bill's provision for school mental health services. I have three major points. First, identifying students early and getting them the mental health services they need supports school achievement and prevents school failure and dropout. Second, early identification and intervention with students with mental health problems makes our schools safer for all students and works to prevent school tragedies such as school suicide. Thirdly, existing mental health funding streams don't cover early identification and school connection. Dedicated funding is needed for this. For the past 5 years, through a federal Safe Schools Healthy Students grant, Tigard Tualatin School District has operated mental health care coordination services, serving over 300 students a year. Through this service, care coordinators work with teachers, administrators, and parents to identify students needing mental health services and connecting them to services in the community. We've had the opportunity to evaluate this service, and students served have consistently shown as a group fewer office disciplinary referrals, fewer suspensions, and an increased percentage of students passing all classes. Just a couple of examples. A seventh grade girl was having anger outbursts at school and had multiple disciplinary referrals. When a care coordinator was called in, she discovered that the girl had been repeatedly exposed to episodes of domestic violence. She was connected with trauma-based treatment, as was her mother. She's now much calmer and starting to make friends. A 10th grade student, a boy, had withdrawn from his friends, stopped doing his schoolwork, and spent most of his time in his room. His family was at a loss as to what to do. A care coordinator helped connect him with services. He's been diagnosed with depression. He's being treated for depression, and his family is receiving help to offer him support. However, we'll be unable to continue care coordination services after the end of the grant because the service isn't covered under either the Oregon Health Plan or third-party insurance because it's a pre-treatment service.
However, without this service, most of the over 1,000 students served wouldn't have been connected with mental health services, or of those who might have been, it likely would have been much too late. A dedicated funding stream such as this bill is needed for schools to provide these really vital services. We therefore very much support this bill and urge you to support it as well.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chair Monis Anderson, Vice Chair Cruz, and members of the committee. My name is David Hidalgo, and I am the Mental Health Director for Multnomah County's Mental Health and Addiction Services Division. Today, I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 823, and I'd like to start by thanking you for highlighting and addressing the need for a stable and comprehensive system of behavioral health care in our state. Multnomah County supports the bill's investments in Senate Bill 823. The programs and services that are identified are areas of need that consistently come up in Multnomah County as areas that are needed for funding and for expansion as well. There certainly is good work being done in the community. However, we know that there are more people to reach. Expanded funding for services identified in the bill will allow for increased health for all Oregon residents and allow us to also achieve the goals in healthcare transformation. Increasing awareness for signs and symptoms of mental health and addictions disorders allow us to provide early intervention, early identification, and to stave off the long-term consequences of chronic illness in our state. As we continue to look at programs that are effective, we know that there are current prevention programs, school-based programs that are also very effective, and we've also heard about the Early Assessment and Support Alliance program, ESA, which has also shown its success. As we increase awareness in the community, we also need to have the capacity to meet that need. So the investments from Senate Bill 823, we believe that the investments will assist in continuing to fund the foundation of existing services and ensure that all Oregonians have the opportunity for long-term and stable recovery from mental illness. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
With that, I'd like to call Dr. Jet Malani, Joel Shapiro, and Wendy Borgi.
Yes, dear Chair Morris Anderson and Vice Chair Cruz and members of the committee, I'm so pleased to be here to support this bill. It's an extraordinary collection of...
Need to state your name.
I'm sorry. I'm Ajit Jet Malani. I'm a child and adolescent psychiatrist. I'm director of the Division of Child Psychiatry at OHSU, and I'm also the chief consulting psychiatrist to AMH and DHS. And the components of this bill are really, truly hand-picked, extraordinary elements of successful intervention strategies that have been done here in Oregon as well as across the nation and other states. I find the notion that perhaps will help us in thinking about the cost of this bill to be critical around the issue of bending the cost curve, and that term hasn't been used. Of course, I'm sure all of you are well familiar with that. But the notion of starting early and inversing the pyramidal effect of unaddressed early issues and the cost that those create down the road is the reason why we should fund this bill. Of course, for all of us, we have compassionate desire to do these services because we have people who are in need. But from a funding perspective, addressing the toxic effects of stress and genetic risks by improving relationship and attachment between families and their children through the efforts of a number of these strategies is the key to diminishing adverse health outcomes in the long term. One specific strategy that is in this bill is the OPAL-K project, which is Oregon Psychiatric Access Line for Kids, which is a consultation line where child psychiatrists can consult with primary care medical homes to improve the capacity of the medical homes to deliver services on-site. It really expands the capacity of the system to deliver health care and mental health care. We plan to establish a system particularly focused on early on in rural underserved areas. I can tell you that child psychiatrists across the state are very interested in working with this project. There is a workforce issue. However, this is a way to extend the workforce that we have through telehealth. And we feel very confident in our ability to expand the service throughout the state over time. And we have great data across the nation that this is an effective strategy. So I applaud these efforts. It's a very exciting time. And I thank this committee for hopefully pushing this forward.
Thank you, and thank you for all that you do. Yes.
Madam Chair, I just want to let you know how much I appreciate all the testimony. Unfortunately, I have to run to another committee, but I will get briefed by my staff on how the rest of the testimony went, and I apologize that I have to leave prematurely.
Thank you.
Senator Monis Anderson and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm Dr. Wendy Berg. I am the legislative chairperson of the Oregon Psychological Association, and I just want to let you know that we strongly support this bill. My experience as a mental health provider in the state of Oregon the past 20 years in reading this bill was like a girl at 16 whose father said she couldn't have a car at all, who walks out and finds a Mercedes in the driveway. This bill is comprehensive in so many ways. It addresses the entire age span, from little children who are placed at risk because of their parents' problems, all the way to older adults, encompassing children in school settings and adults in community mental health. It also is comprehensive in that it really knits together a group of services that recognize that one of the core issues in mental health is problems with social connectedness. And these interventions, by being based on relationships with little babies and on school and community connections with children and adults, recognize and address those issues. Thirdly, it's comprehensive in incorporating some of the most outstanding evidence-based practices that are known. Parent-child interaction therapy, I believe Dr. Jett Malani was mentioning it, takes kids whose parents are misreading their signals, who are causing them trauma by getting upset at them when they're in need of help. That intervention teaches those parents to be sensitive and helps them to interrupt the cycle of abuse. Just one core component. School-based interventions for children who are isolated. Those isolated children are the ones that commit these terrible crimes. Getting those kids socially connected and pulled back into the fold is a good prevention strategy, on and on. So I just want to say this is a fabulous bill, and we couldn't say enough in support of it, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much.
Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, I'm Joel Shapiro. I'm here on behalf of Shared Hope International, and I'm here to talk about one particular audience within the area of adolescent mental health that's often overlooked. As many of you know, Shared Hope works on the issue of child sex trafficking, and all of you here have been engaged somewhat in that issue, and I thank you for that. Senator Cruz and Senator Knope in particular know from the recent Judiciary Committee hearing, this is an audience, child sex trafficking victims, which is very difficult to reach, very difficult to help, and very difficult to get back to a healthy track in their life. And a lot of that has to do with their mental health needs. They've been traumatized. They need trauma-informed care, and they don't have enough advocates within the system that recognize their needs and help them to get those needs. And so we very strongly support this bill because it would help provide that type of awareness and wraparound services that are desperately needed by this audience, this particular subpopulation of adolescents who are suffering from PTSD, often from addiction that's been forced upon them to use substances, and they need that help. So I just really very briefly, I know you don't have much time, want to make a couple more points, which is this bill accomplishes what was The goal of the first federal legislation, which some of you know I was involved with Senator Wyden and also Senator Cornyn from Texas, which was to provide a safe place to receive professional care for the victims of this crime, which not only helps those victims, but it helps our law enforcement officials. And what's so important about that is this is a cycle. And if you cannot break these victims out of that cycle and get them the treatment that they need, you not only don't bend the cost curve, you increase the cost curve over the long run, and you also don't stop the crime. So this is a crime that's increasing. Without helping these victims, we can't reduce the crime and all the associated costs on our society. And with that, I want to just mention one note that I've shared with Senator Courtney's staff that we would like to see changed in the bill, which is if you look at paragraph 5A on the top of page 3, it talks about identifying the traumatic mental impact of adverse childhood experiences. And among those adverse childhood experiences, we would like it to include the phrase sexual exploitation. That is obviously something that is very traumatic and that subjects these victims to the need for trauma-informed care, wraparound services that this bill hopefully would be able to make available. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Comments? Yes, Senator Cruz.
A totally off-subject question for Dr. Jet Malani. At some point, middle of the last century, did you have a relative who taught at Willamette for a period of time?
I did. That was my father.
Okay. I took a class from him called Society, Culture, and Personality.
I did, too. I passed.
Okay. So did I. Yeah, I thought there might be a connection.
They were classmates.
Thank you very much, panel. Seeing no further discussion,
Madam Chair, I just a couple comments. And, you know, the stigma clearly is something that's very real. And I came at this from an email conversation I had on the gun bill with somebody, and my response to them was, we really need to be focused on the mental health needs of these people. And what I got back was, how dare you pick on people with mental illness? And, I mean, you know, so that's interesting. And I'd also like to say that thank you, Madam Chair, for not moving this bill today so we can have the amendment for the legislative oversight, and I believe that will be ready in time. And the other thing I want to say is to Senator Steiner Hayward, thank you very much. You know, what amazes me, and, you know, I've been relatively vocal about my drug abuse. I mean, most people know that. And it goes back to the stigma that you have a mental health issue that is absolutely none of your fault, and you feel more reluctant to talk about that than I do about my drug abuse, which kind of was my fault. So,
they're, I mean, it's diseases, Jeff.
I know.
Both,
but,
diseases.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, we have one more. You didn't sign up. Just make a couple of minutes.
Yeah, Sorry. Thank you. My name is Ed Johnston. I am for the United States for America Elected and Public Employees Oversight Committees. I'm against this bill. In 1980, Ronald Reagan cut out the mental illness bill. That 70% of all people in the asylums and everything were there for financial reason for the corporation. Now, I just went through with a lot of medical issues, as people are well aware in this building, over the years, the attempts on my life, including, I'm going to bring up the recent one, because of mental illness bills and whatever. Now, because I refuse, because if I say I'm a republic and I believe in sovereignty and I do not believe in democracy, that is a mental illness claimed in this state. And it's horrific. November 7th, I was denied medical service again because I refused to sign your drug contracts that are illegal, like Senator Peter Courtney had in 2005 and 7 that I spoke against, the bills that ended up administrative bills. People have a right to their sovereignty and their constitutional born rights. Now, because of the recent things with Newport Hospital, because of the questions they ask you when you go in a hospital, if you have weapons or certain questions, I have a legal right to refuse those questions. And because of that, I've had the police department called on me, try to arrest me. It's been quite interesting when you sit there and you don't want to answer these questions that obviously violate the sovereignty and one's constitutional born rights. November 18th, Newport Hospital because I refused to answer their health questions as 1970 and 72. I was at ADH studies case, Cal Berkeley Saint Hospital, St. Mary's Hospital. I know that's a fraud, because, in my opinion, because ADHD is attention deficit disorder, and that's we're not educating our kids and opening their minds. We keep them locked. 70% of all murders, like the Hook shootings and all of them, all been on psychological medications, each and every one of them. How come that's not brought in the media? Because the drug companies are not liable for these medications. Now, February 18th, I just went through at Newport Hospital because I refused to sign my rights over to the hospital or to evaluate a mental deal to go along with that, like the way I look at it is the 16th century when people were called witches, the women were called witches because their families were murdered by the Indians and nobody knew how to deal with that. So we're going through that because I refused to sign an administration role over at Newport Hospital. I was 30 hours in a heart attack, drugged up. If it wasn't for a couple other residents in my town who took me out of that hospital, took me to another hospital, that the minute I walked in, they did emergency surgery. That saved my life. Now, I'm terrified when I hear these things because I say republic, and because those that disagree with our sovereignty, that could be a mental illness. Thank and we really got to take a caution of what we're doing to our children compared to financial gain for certain stock interests.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Mr.
you very
Johnson.
Much for your time.
Okay. With that, I will, colleagues, since there were some ideas on how to change the bill to make it better, I'm going to work with Senator Courtney and Senator Boquist to make sure that if we can get changes, at least we'll have them drafted. But I'd like to carry this bill over till next meeting, whenever that is,
Thursday.
And because I doubt if we have time to really maybe get the amendments in and the fiscal, but maybe we can. So with that, I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 823. And open a public hearing on Senate Bill 4. And Linda, would
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 4 is appropriating money to DHS to provide mental health and addiction services to seniors and people with disabilities. This declares an emergency as an effective and is effective July 1, 2013. This also has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. This is quote-unquote kind of a companion bill with 823 that is supposed to go down to Ways and Means. Thank you.
Chairman Sanderson, Vice Chair Cruz, this is a second bill that looks at services for DHS. For us, the primary bill is the 823, yes. And so, but I do know this was put into place by Senator Courtney earlier in the process.
Madam Chair, yeah. I think this is a specific request for specific populations. It's a blank in the bill. I think we sent it to Ways and Means, and at least then they have it for consideration in their budget process.
Okay. All right. Ed Johnson, you were signed up for this bill also?
Yes. Ed Johnson, Toledo, Oregon. I'm against part of this, too. 2006, an attempt on my life that everybody's familiar in this building, including when the city of Newport and Toledo elected a public employees conspired against me, trying to put me in federal prison and trying to make a mental issue. As the Inspector General's report came back, as this building has copies in it, states that my medication is medicinal use only. Everybody flips out because people are not supposed to be responsible. Just because there have been those who are not responsible for their actions, the people who are responsible for the actions should not take the punishment for those and their guilt. And it's very disturbing that we go through the process like this. I've been extremely attacked in my community, and I'm not the only person. I just speak out because I understand sovereignty rights and our rights that we have that guarantee us by UCC1s or other constitutional rights. But we don't educate our children. And because we don't educate our children, this is why we have the problems. I have dealt with a lot of people like this, and I was able to open up their minds on other channels. Yeah, and when we have public employees that are doing this for financial or for personal gain, for their corporations or their stocks or whatever nonprofits that they do, it is pretty scary. And if we don't comply, we're threatened. I've been threatened numerous times. Now I'm told I'm denied medical in the state when I was injured on the job, and all the cover-ups dealing with the injury and the circumstances. And because I won't sign one of your contracts, I'm denied medical. And this is horrific. I'm a legal citizen. My family's been in this country for well over 150, 200 years. My family and my grandfather was the president and vice president of numerous unions, including the West Coast Public Employees Union. And I mean, if he was alive today to see half the stuff that democracy has been doing compared to what they did to protect our rights so that way we weren't just because of somebody wants to say something. Like I spoke against House Bill 1143. A neighbor, anybody can make a false police report or claim in a hospital, even on mental illness, and people get arrested. There is no court. You're saying that we don't have entitlement to our rights. You are saying we have to go to prison before we do that. That's why Ronald Reagan in the 80s closed down the structure because 70% of the United States budget was based on people illegally put in these mental institutions. And have we forgot that? So we're going backwards to go back what we did for the 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th century in England, and we're still going to portray it on this land today? I mean, mental illness is created, a lot of it is chemical introduced by our food and by chemicals that our drug companies and doctors give. Like I stated, 70% of all the shootings have been connected to everybody on mental illness drugs. And, you know, that is the problem. If they've been convicted, if they've been on these problems, and now we're giving mental drugs, and then we're allowing them to get away with murders because it's acceptable for the budget. That is scary. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 4 and open a work session on Senate Bill 4.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 4 to the Senate floor to do pass the recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Newman.
Excused.
Senator
Knope. Aye.
Excused.
Vice Chair Cruz.
Aye.
Chairman.
Aye. Motion carries, and it's on its way, and I close the work session on Senate Bill 4 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 382.
Bates is going to make us stay here late, isn't he?
Right. Madam Chair, members of the committees, Senate Bill 382 is directing the Department of Consumer and Business Services and the Oregon Health Authority to jointly develop a form that providers in the state may use to request prior authorization for prescription benefits.
And because we have about 13 people signed up, I want those who are far away or can't be come back on Thursday to testify to come forward first. So after Dr. Bates, Senator Bates testifies, I'll ask for your hand, raising of hands. Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For the record, Alan Bates, I'm a state senator and family physician in Southern Oregon. What you have before you is not my take-home bill. It's the bill that allows me to go home. And let me explain how that works, okay? We had this bill up before you in the last session. We couldn't quite get there with it. It was a bill my wife sponsored because she runs a doctor's office for about 350 doctors. And they want a simpler way of doing business. And so if I don't pass this bill this time, I can't go home, okay? So this, I want you to understand that. I was in my office the last 3 days. I walked in on Saturday morning, had a stack of 200 charts in front of me that had come in during the week. Half those charts were prior authorization forms to be filled out to get a certain drug changed. And there were about 20 different drugs involved. Each form on those 200 charts was different. And you have to dig through the form and figure out what that form says, where you sign it, and where you check it, and what you can do with it. This is an example of the forms I have to go through. Every one of these is different for each insurance company. The amount of time it takes for my nurses and myself to go through this is mind-boggling. And I don't mind getting the prior situation going and dealing with it and getting a generic use and you should and whatever, okay? That's not the thing. The thing is the form is driving us crazy and has gotten us to a point where we just about don't want to do it anymore. And the amount of time it takes is huge. I have examples here of three forms from Minnesota, from California, and from Hawaii where they have one form for the whole state. And somehow California did it, Minnesota did it, and Hawaii did it, and we can't. It's ridiculous. So what we want to do is develop a form, a single form, one or two pages, that will do the same thing they're doing these other states and do it for our practitioners. It's paper simplification. It makes things simpler and easier to do. The insurance companies get the same information they need already. They can still do their prior auths. They can still use that as a tool for holding costs down, but it makes things simpler for everybody. And all they have to do is change their systems. This bill gives them time to make those system changes, get used to the one form we're all going to have, and calls out for DCBS to get it done. It's as simple as that. And we've been waiting 10 years for this. We're done. This is craziness. We need to fix these. With a lot of other things we need to fix in healthcare, this one needs to be fixed, and we can do it now. So I'm going to ask you to please, if at all possible, and so I can go home.
Yes.
To pass this bill
now,
through.
Now, if an insurer needs additional information, is there something on the form that would allow them to get additional information?
It wouldn't be that, because they'd get back to where you were before. Other states have gotten forms together that gives them information they need, and they've all agreed to it, all the insurers. I mean, none of them have one insurance company. They all have multiple insurance companies. California's, by the way, is a little bigger than we are. And they have one form to use for the whole state. There's no reason we can't do this. And it may take two pages, but if you can look at a form as a physician or a nurse practitioner and instantly recognize the form, all you have to do then is look at the medication, make your decision, ask for prior auth or not ask for the prior auth. And the job here over the next year or so is to get a form together for the state that all people agree to, as long as they know they have to do it.
Just to let you know, because I don't know if you're going to be staying there, 5 for it and 4 against. So if you could take into account some of those statements, because it would be nice to move this bill.
My guess is that the problem for the people who are against this, if they've got systems set up to handle things a certain way, there's probably computerization involved, IT involved, but we have to give them time to make those changes. We give them a couple years to make those changes, and we don't expect it to happen overnight. But we've got to start moving in that direction. So the Dash ones, I think we gave them 2 years to make the change.
So it's the Dash ones that you're working on?
Yeah, the Dash ones. I thought the time sequence on the original bill were just too tight. So I wanted to push it out to give insurers, because they got big systems to run, and give them a chance to make that adjustment. And once they make the adjustment, we're all on literally the same page. It should be more effective for everybody.
Excellent. All right. Yes, Senator Cruz.
You need to explain to your wife the concept of unconditional love. And
Well, actually, she understands, Madam Chair and Vice Chair Cruz, she understands it because I've seen how she handles a German Shepherd, so
okay. Yeah,
I don't quite qualify.
Okay, with that, at this point, I only have one person that isn't really going to be in the building on Thursday, and that's Debbie Johnson. Is there anyone else that signed up for this bill? Okay. Debbie and then Shawnee Starr and David Walls.
Oh, I'll step out.
Please proceed. Introduce yourself. And unfortunately, I'm going to limit you to your 3 minutes also.
Well, I feel pretty fortunate that I'm able to come after driving over 100 miles to get here. I feel really important about, very supportive of this bill. Good afternoon,
yeah.
And thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate Bill 382. My name is Debbie Johnson. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Urologic Society, representing urologic surgeons, their practice administrators and staff who are instrumental in the delivery of high-quality urologic care to the communities of our state. To make things, I've got a written testimony I'll go ahead and submit. What I do want to do is to commend the first steps of the Oregon Health Leadership Council in the creation of the Administrative Simplification Claims and Eligibility Work Group, who through their work recommended the use of a common one-page form. The one thing that the Leadership Council is falling short on is being addressed in this particular bill, and that is having some deliverables. And the 2 years is for implementation of all insurance carriers will definitely help meet that. The prior authorization in our state has become so cumbersome that we took a poll of our members, and the average urology practice has 0.25 to 0.5 full-time employee per provider. I just last week spoke to Angela Jordan, who's the practice administrator with Bend Urology, the largest urology practice group in Central Oregon, and she says she has 1.25 full-time employees who all they do is pre-authorizations. They've had delayed in procedures and with respect to pharmaceuticals, and particularly in Central Oregon, she wanted to make sure that that I emphasize that the distances really hamper their patient care. When bureaucracies and inefficiencies prevent access to care, patients suffer. Their care takes longer to receive, and their condition can worsen while they wait for needed prescriptions, surgeries, tests, and procedures. I know this bill is just for prescriptions, but I want to emphasize that this is one step with the prescriptions, and I look forward to seeing a more comprehensive answer. With that, because it's been a long afternoon, I'll submit the written testimony. But I do want to go on record on behalf of the Oregon Urologic Society to say that we are in full support of this bill.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Shaney Starr, and I'm the Interim Executive Director of the Marion Polk County Medical Society. I've submitted written testimony, and I will read it. On behalf of the Marion Polk County Medical Society Board of Directors, we encourage your support of Senate Bill 382. Our ultimate goal is to provide the best possible care to our patients. A survey of 2,400 physicians by the American Medical Association in November 2010 found that the process of prior authorization and the associated requirements not only causes frustration for our physicians, but it also creates delays that interfere with patient care. A uniform, standardized prior authorization form for Oregon providers will not only benefit the providers, but ultimately our patients. Patients will be the beneficiary of quicker turnaround times, which will decrease the wait time to access and obtain much-needed medications, and in many cases, life-saving medications. We are making great strides in Oregon to lower the cost of healthcare delivery and to improve the access to care. Please support Senate Bill 382 so we can continue making those great strides in improving the health of our communities.
Thank you very much. Comments? Yes.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Walls. I'm the executive director for the Osteopathic Physicians and Surgeons of Oregon. I'm here today to speak in support of Senate Bill 382 on behalf of the over 900 osteopathic physicians, residents, and students that we represent. I'll be very brief. I know a lot of the points will be repeated today, but I did want to speak on one unique aspect and look at anything we can do that can help reduce the administrative burden on physicians, and specifically in primary care, I hope we really take a serious look at. As you may know, osteopathic physicians have a strong history of serving in primary care. About 60% of the DOs in Oregon serve in primary care fields. Unfortunately, medical students graduating from medical schools, fewer and fewer are choosing primary care fields, and we feel that we really need a strong primary care workforce in Oregon to meet our healthcare needs. If we have the new students, the new medical school in Lebanon, Oregon, those students are going to be going out on clinical rotation soon. In those clinical rotations, they gain their clinical experience, expand their medical knowledge, but they're also focusing and looking at what medical specialty they're going to go into. If we can reduce administrative burdens in primary care practices and primary care offices, it not only benefits the physician, those patients that they serve, but it can also be a more positive clinical rotation for that student, so they may be more likely to serve or look at a primary care field. So we really see this as helping out primary care in Oregon. It's one tiny piece of the puzzle, but it's something we think can make a difference, and we need to look at any opportunities we can. With that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Seeing none, thank you very much, panel. Gwen Dayton, Tom Barrows, Lisa Trussell. If Lisa doesn't want to come, John Powell.
Who was talking? Lisa talking? Who would have thought?
Can't imagine.
She didn't want to come up with this.
That's all right. Go ahead.
Thank you, members of the committee, Chair Mona Sanderson, and members of the committee. I'm Gwen Dayton. I'm the Oregon Medical Association's general counsel. We support this bill for all the reasons you've heard, and we've submitted written testimony that reiterates those reasons, primarily efficiency at a time when we desperately need it. I'll just state briefly, we understand that there is some concern that certain classes of drugs or drugs might require additional information or something that couldn't be acknowledged on this standardized form. We hear that, but we think that's not a reason to hold up this bill. Frankly, the form will be developed in a rulemaking process. There will be lots of opportunity to contribute to the development of the form, and we would think there should be some way for a form to acknowledge certain classes of drugs or unique classes of drugs that might require some additional information above and beyond what might be required for your more typical drugs, and include that. I have a section on the form that says if you are, I'm not a clinician, but if you are seeking this class of drug or this particular drug, we now require this information to be submitted in addition to the other information. We think it could be done in the form is our point. We hear the concern. We're not disregardful of the concern, but we think it could be done within the context of this form, and we urge the committee to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tom Barrows, representing the Oregon Podiatric Medical Association. We also support Senate Bill 382 for the same reasons you've heard. I think it's a needed addition to streamline and improve electronic prescribing and prior authorization procedures. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Lisa.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Trussell with HealthNet Health Plan of Oregon, and I'm not here in support of the bill. I was thinking today, I think that there are components of the bill that we would be supportive of or at least not opposed to, and one of which is coming up with a standardized prior auth form for prescription drugs. That's one of the things the Health Leadership Council has wanted to do. Unfortunately, something called the ACA kind of got in the way of that for the past 2 years. There's been not much else being worked on besides Medicaid reform and implementation of the ACA, but that is a priority. But if the bill as it is would go forward to require a standardized form and have OID, you know, put one together, that's probably something that we could work along with. But there are some elements that we think should be amended with the bill if it did go forward. One of which, it appears to only apply to the commercial market. So if you're going to simplify things, and we're doing Medicaid transformation, let's do it to Medicaid, let's do it to OEB, and PEB. PEB is self-insured. I'm not sure what the status of OEB is, but apply it to those and any other, if it would be something that would need to be applied with the Oregon Drug Plan or program that we have, apply it to all of them, have the same consistent form. The other thing is that I'm not seeing in here that there's actually a requirement that the provider use the form, so let's require the provider to use the form as well. The other piece that's a bit problematic is the, people don't, this piece about deemed approved, the pharmacy is not going to fill a prescription if the carrier hasn't approved the filling of it. So
there is no way to deem it approved because there's, unless you're going to put the pharmacy in the middle of a dispute between, because there won't be a, my point is there won't be a drug to pick up when you go to the pharmacy if it hasn't been authorized. So I don't know. I mean, that's an issue that I think, I'm not sure how the pharmacy would fall into that where there's a drug that's not authorized. And we already have 48 hours, two-day turnaround times on claim processing in another section of the statute, so it's really not necessary to put the 2 days in here, nor is it nowhere else in Oregon's statute on health insurance is there any kind of a deemed approved or language, because you can ask our friends from the insurance division. I've often wanted them to have a deemed approval on forms filed, and that's not something Oregon is, not a route Oregon has gone down. So, you know, with those suggestions or to improve the bill, then I think that at least from our perspective, my company would not be opposed to it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, we have three more. Let's get you up here. John Powell, Meredith Shield, and Rose Englert. Where is she at? She's right there.
Do you want to go first?
We should fight him against this bill. It's literally killing me. I can't stand it.
Please proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Powell, representing Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. We will do nothing to keep Senator Bates here as long as he'll take his colleagues home with him. And,
that's a good plan.
That's a great plan for me. Madam Chair, Ms. Trussell did cover some of the areas of concern. We understand the reason for this, and we will work toward passage of a bill like this this session. We do not oppose simplification. However, Ms. Trussell did point out that there's no requirement in here for everybody to use it. So it's one thing to catch a football, but somebody's got to throw it. So we think that should be rectified. The 48-hour thing should probably be mute and let the rulemaking process deal with that, because if the health plan gets in a pinch, and there may be a concern over drug interaction, and they're checking on that with a professional who doesn't get back to them and within that time, they have no choice but to deny it. So a 48-hour hard rule can end up in denial instead of getting it done in 52 hours. So we think that that should be part of the rulemaking process. And they... I think there should be some provision, at least, to say that the rulemaking process will consider the need for additional information. You don't have to say every time, but I think the rulemaking process should be at least open to, by verbiage in this bill, to allow for a request for additional information.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, we will try to submit proposed amendment language along those lines.
Would you go through Sandy, please?
We'll do.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay.
Chair Monica Anderson.
If I could, John, that's going to include what Lisa talked about, too.
I'm Mr. Chair, right. I think it is, although I'll have to talk to her more.
Okay. It would be nice if y'all were talking with one voice on this.
We will try.
Okay.
I think that's a good point.
Chair Anderson, and remaining members of the committee, Rose Englert, on behalf of Care Oregon, who has a service agreement with Oregon Health Co-op. Just for the record, we would oppose having this go from Medicaid, as well as PEPA-NOEP, but I'm not going to repeat what's been said before me. We do have very specific concerns about very complex drugs that will require the back and forth, so allowing for additional information on forms and asking for chart notes and things like that for a prior authorization would be helpful. I would oppose this bill under the premise that I believe that we should be using our energy and time over the next 2 years to move toward an electronic online way of doing prior authorizations, have them tied either to provider notes or electronic medical records, as opposed to taking a stopgap measure of having one form and then, again, having to revisit this to go into an electronic or an online version. So we would oppose having a single form and support moving toward a better process altogether than having paper processes. My understanding is that there's best practices available through the Oregon Health Leadership Council now. I don't know if those are finalized or public yet, but I do think that there's steps outside of the legislature that they're being taken to make the PA process a better process until we can move to something that's going to be overall better for everyone. We're trying for innovation, and right now the flexibility to have our own PA processes are able to keep costs down on our side as a plan, and we appreciate having that flexibility. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you very much. And I would like to carry this bill over also, just in case we can have amendments ready, and we'll just keep moving it until we can pass it out.
If I could, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, Rose, but I think it should be for everybody. I think if we're going to have something standard, it should be standard, period. And so I would say that includes all public sector as well. I think, Madam Chair, the other points that were made here, I think, were incredibly valid. The only other question I would have is 2 years enough time? And if we need a wee bit more time, I think that is probably something that would be acceptable as well. But I would hope that you all can get together and get us something relatively quick. So there's a valid reason for doing this. We just need to make sure we're doing it right.
And since the insurance division did not sign up, I assume you're neutral on the bill.
Yes.
There's been no comment and nothing submitted. So if you have any comments, you didn't sign up, so you don't have any comments. All right. With that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 382. And thank you, committee. We are